I want to help others achieve their highest potential by becoming a best version of myself in multiple domains. Financial domain is just one, but then there's a being a father, being a husband, being a community leader, right? Being a servant leader for your business.
Tim is one of the most authentic and genuine people I've ever met.
I sincerely believe he's coming from a position of giving, and that means a lot.
You're going to make huge progress.
Our guest speaker for today is Rafiq Moore. He is the CEO of Caspian. Long time, has done $1 million worth of commercial real estate. On the line with us today. Looking forward to learning a lot. Very like loving family man. I got to meet Rafiq through a program that a couple of friends of mine, Javier Hinojo, Robert Allen, and I were doing called the Teen Millionaire Challenge. And we took on 19 teens, and Rafiq's daughter was one of them. She's phenomenal, as smart as they could possibly get. Amazing what she has accomplished at 16 years old. And so, I'm super excited, super happy to have Rafiq on the line with us today. Looking forward to learning a lot from you, Rafiq.
I don't know. Thank you. There's pretty amazing people here. I'm taking notes here. I'd like to talk to multiple guys like Obelson and Badri. This is the first time at this event, by the way. When Tim Mai invited me, he kind of said, "Hey, would you like to join?" I thought I'm going to be one of the listeners. I'm mostly on the side of the equation, but thank you. Our business is not very special. I think what we've done as a company is just kind of scaled it to tackle larger transactions and our whole thesis is to acquire value-add properties. I started with house flipping, like most of you are doing house flips. I think I've done 400 to 500 house flips in the beginning of my career. We had a business and we have 70, 80 houses a year. We buy them, fix them, wholesale them, whatever, rent them out. And I bought a first warehouse building. We bought warehouse buildings in the past kind of without a strategy, was just one-off deals since 2006-07. But then in 2013, when I completely shifted focus and started buying industrial real estate, our business was very simple. We buy a big box and cut it up into small bays. So think mini storage, but not quite mini. I mean, our average size would be anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 square feet. And we buy a 30,000 square foot property. We buy a 50,000. Now we're doing 165,000 square foot property in Milwaukee. And what happens is when you have a big defunct manufacturing facility that nobody wants, and most people look at it from a redevelopment standpoint to scrape it and start, go vertical. He says, "Well, what do you do? I said, "Well, I flip houses. I buy, fix, and sell houses." I was doing a lot of houses, 10, 12 houses at a time. So I was pretty proud. I'm pretty busy, Mm-hmm. And then he says, "Well, as I started talking about houses, he sort of dismissed and said, "Oh, it's a bad business." I said, "What do you mean it's a bad business? It's a good business. I know a lot of people. I go to these events and I know a lot of successful housing people. And I'm pretty successful." He said, "Have you made $1 million on any deal?" Mm. And I said, "Well, not really." And he says, "Well, in my business, I deal with larger assets and larger checks and whatever." And so I said, "Well, I don't know nothing about it, but, teach me, sensei." And he said, "Well, there's this building. You should look into it. You can buy it for $2 million. and you can sell it for, you know, you can clean it up and sell it for three. Wow. I didn't know, I had no prior experience, but it was a $2 million building. And so I basically went after it. And initially we were going to do it together, 50-50 split. And he was going to totally guide me through it. But 2 weeks prior to closing, he essentially said, no, he cannot do it. He said, you have to do it on your own. So in the last 2 weeks of the deal, I had to raise $200,000 to do the deal. And I sold 20% of the deal for that $200,000. And ultimately a year and a half later, exactly, you know, a year and, you know, 4 months maybe later, we sold it for $3.2 million.
Wow.
And throughout the time, the building made about $12,000 cash flow. So it was a really good deal. And I, you know, after that, I immediately turned 1031 into two other deals. And since then, just been on to the next. One thing that is a sort of defining characteristic of my personality is I don't dabble in things. I jump into deep end of the pool and I start buying, you know, 3, 5, 10 properties every, because I used to a lot of cadence with the housing, right? We always do deals. And I had a team, I had accounting, construction, and leasing. So we just went all out. And as a result, the difference between housing and the commercial is the down payments are larger. So you have to raise money on each deal. And so every time we had a deal under contract, we would essentially create a mini raise. It wasn't quite a syndication. Our model has always been in trying to involve the seller and have seller contribute some money towards down payment or give him some equity or whatever. So many times we would bring the seller and he would give us 10%. And then there's a real estate commission, that's another 3-5%. And then we just scrape up the balance of the money and put deals together. Because our deals are value add, there's always been a delta between the purchase price and rehab cost and the after repair value. So I found some lenders in town who'd be okay with 6 months or 12 months seasoning to refinance the property and get all the equity out. And so it's been a consistent rinse and repeat. Like my mentor says, you've learned one trick pony, and you've learned this trick really, really well to buy these buildings and stabilize them and refinance. And at any point in time, like we have multiple deals under contract that all, it's like, it's just, that's what we do. And we are all about relationships. We try to develop relationships with our, you know, brokers. We always pay referral partners. We never cut anybody out. We're very principled in the way we do business as a company now. And we have a really good reputation with the banks and vendors and referral partners and tenants. We really take care of our tenants. So we have a lot of cross referral opportunities from whether it's buying a building or it's finding other tenants. And now we are in Midwest. We have properties in Texas and Florida. We like Southern properties because it gives us an opportunity to get out in the winter. And it's really cold in Minnesota, as you probably know. But that's the business. It's a pretty, you know, I got lucky to have met some pretty amazing people. I also am part of Commercial Academy. For those of you who don't know, Commercial Academy is a really good place where we get together on a quarterly basis. And there's a lot of guys like me, you know, I'm not very special. I'm just one of many guys. And we all sort of collaborate and cross-pollinate ideas. And some people do mini storage, like my friend Jeremiah owns Patriot Holdings, and he does a lot of mini storage all over Nevada and East Coast. I got friends that do retail. Got some friends, you know, build a vertical, build apartments. But that's basically my little story in a very short period of time.
That's awesome. And Commercial Academy, just so when everyone knows, it's run by Scott Shiel, right?
Yep, Scott Shiel's organization.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I didn't know that you're still in it. So you're still, even though you've been in it for now, how
10
long?
Years.
10 years. And you're still getting a lot of value out of it. So it must be a pretty advanced group.
You know, I was, it's very interesting. I was thinking about it. When I started, I was like, you know, the lowest common denominator. Now I'm probably in the top, you know, 5% or 10%. I don't even know. I don't count anybody else's money. But I can tell you one thing. I've developed really good, meaningful relationships with my friends. It's like we climb Mount Elbrus. We're going to Kilimanjaro next year. Our wives are friends. So we created this really good network of real estate guys. And then we cross-pollinate. Like sometimes I have money and they have deals. Sometimes they have money, I have deals. So we've basically been cross-investing in each other's deals. And I've contemplated dropping out of it because I have so many other mentorship groups. I feel like I have too many of them. But then I realized that from the value, from the fulfillment standpoint, you know, if I were to remove myself from there, I lose contact with my friends. And just gives us an excuse to get together for it, yeah.
Right. Yeah, no kidding, right? That's awesome. So rough numbers, what would you say is the amount of money you've raised from all the deals you've done?
You know, I've never thought about in the conglomerated sense. Mm-hmm. Like I told you, we were close to 2 million square feet in real estate. As of maybe, you know, beginning of the year, I've been selling a lot of properties lately. So we're probably down to 1.5, 1.6. Again, I don't really count that. But having kind of bought and sold properties all the time, the raising capital has been one of my sort of basically muscles that I've exercised. Again, being in a relationship business, I've created a lot of relationships with local high net worth individuals and families. And, I pay very well. I secure now, like most of the deals I do now, mm-hmm. I try to take majority of the risk. If I put the people in the deal, let's say we bought a 240,000 square foot shopping center in Milwaukee right now. Mm-hmm. And I really like that deal. I think it's one of those assets that could be a legacy cash flowing asset. And I said to my friends, hey, I can, you know, borrow $1.5 million, pay a 10% coupon on a preferred return, but also like to reserve the right to buy you guys out on a 10% annualized return, right? So if they have a capital account of $1 million, in a year it would be 110, in 2 years it would be 120, and, you know, we can't really go long. But if I stabilize the property and the value goes up by double, by two, you know, from $5 million to $10 million, the cost of capital will only be $500,000. So we use a lot of these types of techniques to try to, first of all, pay our investors back and keep them happy, so they're not stuck in our deals for 10 years. But at the same time, it gives us the opportunity to keep higher percentage of the ownership in these deals for long term cash flow appreciation.
Yeah. Okay. And so, I mean, I know I'm pushing you on the numbers, but if you have to, like, just give us a ballpark number, would you say?
You say, so between debt and equity, I'll probably say $50 million in equity. And, you know, if I've done, you know, $300, $400 million in debt, I don't know. Like, I have to go through my tally. Like I said, I currently owe $90 million in debt. That's what I have, and our portfolio size, and I don't own the portfolio 100%. I probably own, you know, percentage of it, but we have close to, $160, $170 million portfolio of assets under management.
That's awesome. Those are, yeah, definitely good, great numbers for sure. Yeah. Now, when you get into the commercial space, I know you started with that, you know, $2 million property. Did you, after doing that deal, did you have a vision of, okay, I'm going to do $100 million asset under management or $1 billion, anything like that?
Yeah. So it's interesting how there was a newspaper article about death, this high net worth individual, and how he passed on $100 million to his son locally.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was like, hey, this guy died, and, you know, his son inherited $100 million in assets under management. And I remember thinking about it and saying, oh, how nice it is to be him. He inherited, and he's my age, this guy, a local guy.
Oh, wow. Wow.
In Minnesota. Wow. And I'm like, man, how nice it is to be him with $100 million in assets under management. And then that's when I sort of said, you know what? I'll just build my own $100 million in assets. And that was my goal. I've created that a big, hairy, audacious goal about 2013, 14, and it was inconceivable at the beginning. It's just such a big number, felt like it. And essentially, 2020, I reached that goal. I was at about $100 million in assets under management. And I was like, all right, I thought that's going to be the destination, that, and I'll, you know, sail into a sunset and kind of stop working. And then I joined Tiger 21. And when I joined Tiger 21, I realized that I'm at the bottom of the group with $100 million in assets under management. So wow. These guys, next level. So I'm sitting there like, oh, I guess there's still time and I could probably, you know, go for the big B. Now, I don't really build my life around money. Money is not the most important thing for me. I try to focus more on impact and social, meaningful relationships are important to me. And I try to do good, our company. And a byproduct of our, you know, the value we bring to the marketplace is the, you know, is the net worth that I've built and people that work with me are building. So, you know, $100 million was the goal, and it was pretty, I was pretty thrilled to have gotten to it, but nothing changed. I mean, it's the same thing. I still do the same work. I still go to the same gym. Yeah, I haven't retired yet, if that's what the question is. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So so do you even have the $1 billion, like 1 billion asset under management as a goal at this point?
So I'll tell you one thing. I had a, I didn't like dare think about it at first. I was like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to, like, to me, people who've always focused on money and focused on, you know, big dollars. I don't know. To me, it kind of seemed a little douchey, you know, I don't know. And so I was like, I don't want to say that. I don't want to be $1 billion now. You know, I just want to kind of live my life. I want to keep what I have and I want to create a lot of value. I mean, mm-hmm. We really take care of our tenants. We are a raving fan tenant company. We want our tenants because we buy distressed assets in remote areas. We don't know anybody. And if we really serve those tenants become our marketing platform to attract more tenants. And investors, we really try to take care of our investors. As a result, I am now coach to a multiple, my junior Jedis, and they want to be a $100 million guy each and gal, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm sort of helping them and we syndicate and do deals together. I'm, you know, we bought a 66,000 square foot deal in Peoria. And as a result of me helping them and they want to get 100 million, is there a chance that I'm going to get to $1 billion with them as a, you know, essentially if I have 10 $100 million guys and I'm partners with them, then we'll get to that $1 billion size. So it's really not my mental sort of determination, but I know that unless something happens with these interest rates and unless the economy tanks and we get completely wiped out, if we just continue creating value in this marketplace in about 6 to 10 years, we'll probably get to $1 billion in size. But that's not the most important thing for me.
Right. That's awesome. And it sounds like you get a lot more fulfillment out of helping those guys get to their 100 million than you would get, you know, yourself getting to $1 billion. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people have been asking me, you know, what, why do you work so hard? Why do you always, you know, never stop? You know, don't you have enough? And in pursuit of my like understanding of who I am, I had this class with ontological self discovery, and I realized that what fulfills me is the desire to help others achieve their highest potential. And so I kind of recreated my purpose, and I said I want to help others achieve their highest potential by becoming a best version of myself in multiple domains. Financial domain is just one, but then there's a being a father, being a husband, being a community leader, right? Being a servant leader for your business. I now my metrics for success and fulfillment are only 20% financial, and there's other things that I sort of specialize in.
Right, that's awesome. All right, so I'd love to go back to your early deals. So let's take your first three commercial deals. What were some of the challenges you went through in raising money for those deals?
Oh yeah. I had this building sold three times, the first one. And of course, you know, I'm selling it for 3 million. We have debt about 1.5. I was expecting 1.5 to come back. Plus I had 80% of that. So I was super excited. And guess what I did? I went shopping right away. Now the transactions have not happened yet. I mean, the closing is like set for whatever, but the purchase was accepted and they're going through due diligence. So I said, I went and bought a 20,000 square foot shopping center and a 27,000 square warehouse building, one for 900,000, the other one for 1.8 million. And my deal has fallen apart in the middle. Like, so now, not only I cannot sell the building, and I haven't sold the building, but I have to close on these two. So at Commercial Academy, I'm sitting in the class. I'm like, man, I got this 20,000 square foot shopping center under contract. I put a sign. I asked the seller to allow me to pre-market it for lease. I have leases signed. I have a lot of stuff going. And now I don't have 300 grand to buy it. So I called the owner. I mean, and Scott on stage says, you know, what we want to do is try to involve seller and financing as one of our first ways to try to get raise money. I was like, great, genius. So I got up, left the lecture hall, called Mark, the seller. I said, Mark, here's the thing. Mark, I'm really, really sorry to tell you, but my sale of my building has fallen through and I don't have 300 grand to buy your building in a week. And I have the appraisal done. I got the leases signed. I've done so much work on this property. And I really, really was hoping that you can borrow me money just for 6 months. And I promise you, Mark, I will pay you back. And I'll pay 5% interest. Well, Mark liked me. Mark liked my hustle. He liked what I would do, what I was doing. Mind you, at the property, somebody got murdered 6 months prior to my acquisition. So it had a bad rep. It wasn't in a bad area, but somehow it was a bad, like a dive bar. And he was just over it. He was a retired, very successful executive. And Mark's like, you know what? You got it. I'll give you $300,000. Send me the paperwork. And by the way, don't worry about 6 months. I'll give you 3 years.
Wow. So that's awesome.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. I paid him off 14 months later. 14 months later, we stabilized it. It got appraised at $2 million. And we spent $200,000 to stabilize. So our basis was 1.1. That shopping center we actually sold a year ago for $2.2 million. Marshall sold it. I don't know if you know Marshall, my friend. He's Vietnamese too.
No, I don't know.
So anyway, that was a challenge. And because I've had a lot of residential business and I've, you know, in residential, it's the same thing. You always get people to finance your equity. In commercial, the numbers are a little larger. On the second transaction, $1.8 million acquisition, the appraised value was about $3.5 million. I did the same thing. I asked my friend to borrow me money at 15%. I said, 15%, I'll pay you on, I think it was 400,000 or 500,000. And after stabilizing it, and it was 50% vacant, I put a school in there and I was able to refinance and pay them off. So
that's awesome.
I got lucky. I mean, every time I'm just, maybe because I'm a nice guy, everybody's nice to me. It's like the world is a reflection of who you are. So I always tend to talk to people that lend me money and I've been very, you know, good at paying it back.
That's awesome. So who is your ideal, private investors now that you raise money from? Like, what's their profile look like?
Well, I'll tell you, it's very simple. My ideal people who want to invest money are people who have money, people who have liquidity, and so I always say, hey, you know, every time I meet people that have any interest in investing in real estate or anywhere else, I always say, well, how liquid are you? And if people have, you know, you cannot ever ask people if they have $500,000, you can ask them for $500,000. People don't, they're not going to give you all the money they have.
Right.
And so naturally I've gravitated towards a lot of people with deep pockets, and I don't have like 100 investors. I probably have 5 or 6 families or friends with very, very successful families that are very liquid. And I created the partnerships with them or I borrow money from them. And it's been a slow evolution. Some of these deals I've done on my own, some of these deals I've partnered up. And one of the things that it's pretty generous today, it seems like, but in the beginning it didn't. So we buy a property for, let's say $2 million. And let's say it needs $500,000 of rehab. It's worth $4 million. I find the property, I remodel the property, I release the property, and my equity partner, Freddie or Andre or anybody, would come in with 100% of the equity and we will sign on debt together. And then they would get all their money back. Plus they would get about 8% return on their money. And then we split the profits 50-50. And the way I model it, I say, look, worst case scenario, you get 8% of your money if my strategy doesn't work. But if my strategy works, you know, we, you know, make 20, 30, 40% return. And we've done a lot of those types of deals.
That's awesome. So, you know, someone, let's say someone starting new into, you know, into the commercial multifamily space, and what would be some of your recommendation for them to start raising money?
You know, I did actually a little networking event in our office, and we talked about how to raise money. So this is my secret. You guys listening? Please. Yes. Not share it with the world, or do, doesn't matter. So here's what I did. I had all these residential investors, right? And I would find a really good deal. And I would put together an executive summary and a plan, strategy, right? And it's basically an email with a bunch of pictures and maybe a little PDF document. And I'll send it to, let's say, Mai. I'll say, hey, Mai, I got this shopping center. I want to buy it for this. I want to do this. And I need this kind of money. Now, because I'm a simple guy, not a very sophisticated guy, I've always done business with one other person, sometimes with two, but I've never syndicated like with 50 people. It's just not been my model. My model is on one person, you know, half a million, whatever. So I send it to Mai. I'll say, hey, Mai, here's the strategy. Would you be interested? If everything goes well, you'll make 30% of your money, right? And then if Mai knows me and trusts me, Mai might be interested, but I don't know what his, you know, financial situation is. So then after Mai, I'll take that same email and send it to Brian. And then I'll send it to John. And then I'll send it to Stefan. Then I'll send it to Jay. And I'll just keep sending it to 20 people who are my friends who I've done business with in the past, who I know have capital. And then one of them always says, you know what, Rafik, I like that. It's really next to my house or my school or whatever. I'll do the deal with you. Let's go. And then once we close on the deal, then I create another email and I'll send, hey, Mai, here's the thing. Thank you very much for listening to my, you know, my story or whatever, or this deal. We've closed on this deal. If you don't, I'll keep you abreast of what happened. And then I send another email 2 weeks later saying, hey, Mai, would you sign the lease? Now the value has gone up by $600,000. Hey, Mai, thank you very much. We just refinanced the property and my investor got their money back. And now the property is worth X and we're going to make this kind of cash flow. And then last email will be, hey, Mai, we sold the property and my investor made $500,000 on a 300 grand investment he gave to me. Thank you for being there. Thank you for being a friend and whatever. But then what happens is, as I find another deal, same thing, rinse and repeat. And then when Maya receives a second message, this time he will be more interested in learning. And Maya would get overcome with FOMO, fear of missing out.
Right.
Because it's fun to be in deals. It's fun to do the, you know, to see these videos and pictures and whatever. And as a result, and I have to do this over and over and over again. Now I, you know, and again, you have to be authentic. You have to be honorable. You have to be clean. And, you know, like if you do everything right and if you live by your principles, the only thing you need is competence. Like there's two things that you really have to worry about is character, which basically who you are as a person. And then competence is what you know and how you do what you do, right? Are you good at it? Or are you mediocre at it? Are you going to screw up and not get it to the finish line? And so as a result, you know, I've been very lucky to have created a huge sort of a following of capital partners to where I don't even think about money anymore. I write offers right and left every day as soon as I find a deal. And then I just make a phone call and I got multiple friends who are always willing to do deals with me. And depending on their proclivities, depending on their risk tolerance and whatever, sometimes I just say, look, I'll give you 10% interest and I'll give you 10% bonus to buy you out. And it's a, you know, 16 months or 24 months, 20% return coupon. Or if somebody says, look, I really want to hold real estate, I say, fine. And then we buy real estate. But that's been basically my little signature of like my approach.
Right, right. And so you're doing that from a very like a personal email. You're not taking them through sort of like an email campaign or anything.
No,
like
no.
That.
It's all friends and family. Okay. I don't have 100 people.
Right.
I only have like 15, 20 people. And now, like I haven't done this type of a model that I told you about for like 5 years, because after doing it 3 or 4 times, all those people, 10 guys or whatever, every time I have a deal, every one of them is eager to come in, right? And recently, my mentor and I set up a fund. And it's really because I was sitting, I'm like, we were...
Na hora que você tá saindo do carro.
Hold on, let me mute one. How, Isabel, can you... Oh, there you go. Thank you. All right, go ahead, Rafiq.
So I was sitting and crying on my mentor's shoulder. And that's a different mentor, by the way. This guy has funds. Like, he's been in the funds business. And said, so, you know, I came to this country when I was 20 years old. I never had any meaningful jobs. I've always worked, like, I've worked for 2 years at this small mortgage company. And I've never had any, like, a formal education in creating a fund. So I've always sort of figured out things on a bootstrap and without any formal, like, mentorship or education. And so I've always, for the rest of my life, I'll be this scrappy, one at a time kind of a deal guy. And I'm really eager to do something bigger and grander. And I don't know people who can help me administer the fund or whatever. That was about a year ago. And it's like, hey, come just join me and run my fund with me. Now, this guy is about 64 years old. So I'm 44, so 20 years older than me. And he's sort of almost going to retire. But this is, you know, he's done multiple funds already. He's done multiple of these types of funds. And he's like, yeah, you can work with us and no problem. So I'm co-GPing a fund where we're raising $100 million and we're going to leverage at about 20%. And it's going to be all the same thesis of adaptive reuse of large boxes, such as retail, industrial, or maybe big office tower conversion into apartment. Right. I am a small cog in that big machine that he has. So I'm definitely on the learning side of the equation. I'm sitting and, you know, learning and whatever, but it's been great. Level of execution is higher. It's a very, very big business, and I'm super excited about it. It's a big business that we'll have to deploy a lot of money. It's, every deal has to be over 10 million. It's 10 to 30 million or maybe $50 million. It will probably be like 10 deals in the whole fund versus I do a lot of stuff under $10 million.
So have you guys already raised the entire $100 million for the fund?
So there's about 75. So at first it was going to be a $50 million fund. And they had so many people interested that they came in at 75 and they just announced it. So he's like, you know what? We're just going to go for 100 because there's so much interest. And I've already kind of sent multiple of my friends anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. So I've been able to bring some investors as well. But that's been pretty amazing for me.
Very
to learn.
Cool. So the same investors that were investing in your deals are open to investing in the fund as well.
That's what it sounds like. I was always wondering if those investors who never cared about me, they just want deals and specific metrics of each deal. But they were sort of like, yeah, we like it. We're happy to do it. You know, put me down for $500,000, put me down for 700 or whatever. Minimum is 250. So I said, yeah.
All right.
So evolution.
And what's y'all's plan to raise the remaining $25 million?
They already have a whole bunch of clients, investors, and there's a essentially a program, and there's a subscription, there's a portal, and so I personally told my mentor, I was like, look, I'm super excited. I want to go on the streets with you, and I want to sit with a bunch of my friends, and I want to see if I can bring $10 million. So we are actually going to methodically go with the fund paperwork and just go a bunch of meetings and set up lunches and dinners and whatever. And I'm really curious to see if I can actually reach that $10 million goal for this fund.
Awesome. So how does someone go about building the kind of funds that you have? Is it going to events, you know, being a part of groups like commercial academies and going to those type of events? Would you say that's the best way, or is there some other ways?
That's a good question. I guess being deliberate and living with the plan. So to me, I've always needed money, right? I didn't have any money to start with. I have a guest who just flew in, and we gotta go out on a meeting afterwards. Yeah,
okay.
I'm doing a Zoom call. So. Anyway, so I basically have, You know, are you familiar with the concept of reticular activation system?
Yeah.
So to me, every time I heard that somebody has money, I kind of slightly, I want to talk to this guy. Then we get together and you tell them, hey, this is what I do. And if they have any kind of inclinations to invest in real estate, then I just get their phone number and information. I always invite them to my office. I always introduce them to my team. If they have time, I will sit them down. I always have a lot going on. So I just get them into my car and we drive. We drive to my properties and I say, hey, here's what's going on. We're building this. We're, you know, cutting this, whatever. And it's fascinating stuff because not a lot of people do this. I guess that was one of my things. And then joining Tiger 21, joining the DIC, we always sort of in that realm of real estate and investments and stuff. And when you constantly are in those circles, people are looking to do deals.
Right.
And so I think the other thing is I'm very passionate about what I do. And I think my wife says, would you shut up talking about real estate? What's wrong with you? I'm like, that's what I do. That's who I am. So I think that's the other thing is I always do this and it just it happens naturally.
That's awesome. So share with us about this Tiger 21 group. What's the qualification to get in the group and what type of people are in the group?
So Tiger 21 is a very interesting mastermind. I've always been sort of gravitated towards masterminds, whether in town or like commercial academy. It's been a great place to meet people, to network, to learn. Being a prolific student of life, I've definitely, if anybody says, what do I do to elevate in life and achieve my goals? I always say, you got to join the mastermind and find the room where you're lowest common denominator. So when I joined Tiger 21 in 2020, and I was about $100 million portfolio, and I thought I'm somebody, you know, successful or whatever. So I go in there and minimum subscription amount is you have to have $10 million of liquid assets to invest so you can invest in deals. This club was created for people who sold their businesses and have that exit and are, you know, interested in investing in various deals. They don't just do real estate. Real estate is a big part of what they do, but then there's equities. There's a bunch of different deals. Pretty fascinating. I would not have learned so much about stuff outside of real estate had I not joined the group. And the minimum requirement for net worth is 20 million. You have to have $20 million of net worth. It costs 30 grand or 35 grand a year to join. And they didn't have a group in Minnesota. So I have to fly to Chicago every month for the meeting, 5-hour meeting. And they opened a Minnesota group about 6 months ago, maybe 9 months ago now. And now I just joined that group. It's pretty... awesome. A lot of people meet there because they want to invest in something. And if you develop relationships and have a good program, I've witnessed how some of my friends in Tiger 21 created a fund and they would get their fund completely subscribed by just being in Tiger 21.
Wow.
It was amazing. Definitely a place where you can raise some money.
Right. That's really awesome. Okay. So you've been through the last market cycle, right? In 2008, where are you, you know, yeah. What's your crystal ball saying with this market that we're coming on?
I don't know. It's future. We always think that future is representation of some kind of a past event, but future is, there's so many, you know, who'd have known about COVID-19? Type of situation. That's a completely different phenomenon to us. So I don't claim to think that I know what's going to happen. But one thing I keep telling myself is that I want to be as adaptive and as responsive to the market. I've gotten really like destroyed in the last downturn. And so as a result, I've been really shedding a lot of assets because even 6 months ago, we were getting top dollars for our assets. And it's easy to be a genius when the market goes up, right? Everybody's smart when market goes up. And today, if the market, we don't know if the Fed is going to reverse course or they're going to continue, but I don't see how this economy can be sustainable in a 7% rate environment. I mean, if they didn't raise it so aggressively, if they raise it over a 3-year period, I think it would be sustainable. But such a, you know, even at 6%, it's really, we're seeing a lot of slowdown. So what I'm trying to do is just be ready and be liquid. And I don't think, and I hope it's not going to be as bad as last time around, but I think there will be some pain. And us being in a distressed real estate market, I feel like while we will probably get, we might lose some tenants and we might, you know, have to refinance at higher interest rates, I think we will be on the receiving end of this, because that's what we do of this economy, because we take the distressed assets, foreclosed assets, and we stabilize, put life back into them. So I'm trying to stay optimistic, tell my team, hey, get ready. You know, in 2 years, it might be open season on a lot of commercial real estate. You don't have to go to Ohio and Wisconsin. You can buy them right here. But that's my prediction, is that if they can keep raising rates, it's going to get really bad. But I think what's going to happen is they're going to reverse course to kind of keep everybody happy. So we'll see what happens. And I'd like to hear what other people think.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll open it up in a little bit here. I know I've met Julie, right, your daughter. Absolutely amazing. What are you teaching your kids that perhaps is not commonly taught out there?
Well, I don't know. One thing I feel guilty with Julie, because I've been so busy, you know, building my deals. I've now changed, you know, I was a weekend warrior for as long as I remember myself, until maybe 5-6 years ago. I said, I don't want to do this anymore. But I remember having two of my kids in the back of my car, and I'm driving around and I'm looking at properties on Saturdays and Sundays and stuff. But Julie is, you know, she turned 17 now. When she turned 16, she wanted to get her driver's license or a permit or driver license. Yeah. And I said, you know, she wanted a car, as old teenagers want cars. And I said, well, nobody bought me a car. Why would I buy you a car? Go. And I know you can buy yourself a car, but here's what I'll do. I'll buy your house. We'll find a house for you. And why don't you go flip a house?
Mm.
And when you flip that house, you know, we'll split the profits. I'll be your investor. Just like I was on the other side of the equation when I started this business. So, well, she said,
I love that.
She was 16 at the time. So I teamed up with a realtor and we went 3-way on this house in Maplewood, Minnesota. And they bought the house for $112,000, and they spent forever, 6 months to remodel. It should have been two months, but it was a really intense deal. And lo and behold, they made $86,000 in that job. And wow. Of course, I was the lucky recipient of 33% of that. But then she, about $24,000, and of course, you know, I say to her, I said, you teenagers know everything. You're super smart, but you lack in the wisdom department. She goes and buys herself a $24,000 car after getting a $24,000. And then how about insurance? How about gas? And so, boom, she's actually flipping 4 houses now. And her life has changed dramatically towards the worse, Tim, because market is tanked. She's behind. She's flopping. And I'm watching her. I mean, you know, ultimately, I'll be losing the money on those 4 houses, which whatever. It's not like I'm going to, you know, bust her chops, because I invested, and it's been a year now. And
you're thinking you're going to lose money on them? Like, is that bad?
It took forever and they cannot sell them now because the prices have dropped. So I think we'll make significantly lower amount
of money.
I said, hey, it's not always roses and butterflies. Sometimes you gotta, and right now we're gonna lose money on these deals, or maybe I'm exaggerating for her because I wanted to learn. But she's kind of stressed out a little bit, and I'm like, you know what, that's life. It's not always interest rates of 3%. People are, you put something on the market, you know, there's 15 offers. It's not like that at all. No.
Right. I mean, and that's such a valuable lesson that she's getting to learn right now. And can you imagine what our world would be like if all the parents do this with their kids, where,
I don't know,
it's like, hey,
I one thing that I've learned, all of my friends and investors are in their 70s and 80s. And I remember asking a question to my mentor, like, this guy's worth $100 million, right? And I'm like sitting there and I'm like, look, what could I do today to be like you when I grow up? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really dialed in. I'm really trying to like absorb the wisdom. And he looks at me with a scorn and says, go home and play with your kids. What's wrong with you? You know, I'm in New Jersey looking at the shopping center. It's like, what are you doing? You're just robbing your kids of the time. You don't have no business buying properties in New Jersey. Go home, play with your kids. Mm. And then as he tells me a story, this guy is worth a lot of money. He doesn't talk to any of his kids. And some of them are on drugs. It really robs you of the joy.
Oh, man.
Existence. And as I sort of learned that, I was like, oh, shit, that makes sense. You know, yes, you're going to have all this money, all this glory, but what good is it if your kids are all, you know, messed up? And so I sort of reversed course. Look, I'm not going to be doing so much real estate. Well, I'm not going to work on weekends. And I really want to spend more time with kids. And so that was a lesson I learned from some of my mentors.
That's a super, super valuable lesson there. So that leads me to, you know, our last question here. What is your biggest passion right now? What do you want to achieve the most in your life right now, at this time in your life?
You know, one thing that I'm super grateful to have achieved this little success that I had, and I don't really have any, you know, burning desires to achieve any one particular feat. Like, I don't have a desire to be a billionaire. I don't have a desire to whatever. I'm just kind of coasting in life, and I want to have impact. I want to help people. I want my work to mean something. Mm-hmm. And as a result, every day when I come to work, whatever, I want to just show up in the best way. Come on in. Julie is coming in. And so I think if we're going to continue this journey, I think we're going to get to $1 billion in assets under management. But I think I'm passionate about helping people achieve their highest potential by really becoming a best version of myself. Say hello to Tim Mai.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, Julie. Doing good. How are you?
Nice to see you. I like the shirt.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we've been talking about you.
We're talking about your flips and flops.
Yeah. Good or bad? Yeah. Well,
it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. We have to go to look at some properties that we have under contract. So Julie's going to be our driver today.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah, go ahead and finish what you were saying.
Yeah, so that all I was saying is that I don't really consider myself super passionate about any one particular thing. I just want to kind of continue doing what we're doing. And like I said, maintaining good health, being a good father, hopefully being a good husband, being a good community leader is what I want to do as I evolve. I don't really have a specific a passion for any particular. I want to make sure I don't die climbing Kilimanjaro next year. That's a very important passion to survive. But other than that, it kind of falls into the category of, hanging out with friends and being physically fit.
That's awesome. Love it. All right. Before we go into the Q&A section here, I just want to take this moment to thank you so much for doing this interview with me today. I've learned a ton from you. Yeah. And definitely excited to watch, to look forward to watching your journey with the $100 million fund and what you do around that. We'll definitely get you on. Yeah.
If there's anything I can do to help you guys, let me know. I'm happy. I'm one phone call or an email away. You can reach me at, GaspianRealty.com is our website. But Tim, I'm sure, has my contact information. And I do really want to do something around the tokenization of the fund for the next iteration of raising capital, because a lot of my young investors want that liquidity, and I like that opportunity to have the liquidity in real estate investment. So that's something we've been kind of thinking about and pursuing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, maybe we'll do a call just on that. That would be a lot of fun. So yeah. I'll invite.
Send me some invites. I'd like to be. I apologize. I didn't really know I'm going to be interviewing. I thought I'm going to be one of the guys in the audience. So I was at the gym.
You are a superstar, so of course you're going to be the expert on the line. So,
there's a lot of superstars here.